Good evening, this is your host, Sandra Mendes, on the Natural Radio Show, where beautiful bronze women worldwide come together in peace, harmony, and respect. Natural Radio Show is a platform for us to encourage holistic and sufficient discussions that will center our focus on empowerment and upliftment for all bronze women worldwide on the Natural Radio Show. Once again, this is your host, Sandra Mendes, on the Natural Radio Show. And today's date is August 29, 2019, on a Thursday evening. And tonight is Thursday Poetry Night for our youth, ages 6 to 17 and up. Usually how this goes is that I do 4 poetry selections. 2 poetry selections would be for ages 6 to 9, and 2 other poetry selections would be for ages 10 to 12, and then 2 monologues that would be performed by myself would be for ages 13 to 17 and up. So please be advised that this is a 30 to 60 minute audio recording, and that you all can stay tuned. So without further ado, I'm going to start with the first 2 poetry selections for ages 6 to 9. So the first poetry selection is The Elf and Dormouse by Oliver Herford. Under a toadstool crept a wee elf, out of the rain to shelter himself. Under the toadstool, sound asleep, sat a big dormouse, all in a heap. Trembled the wee elf, frightened and yet fearing to fly away, lest he get wet. To the next shelter, maybe a mile, sudden the wee elf smiled a wee smile. Tugged to the toadstool, toppled in two, holding it over him. Gaily he flew. Soon he was safe home, dry as could be. Soon woke the dormouse. Good gracious me, where's my toadstool? Loud he lamented, and that's how umbrellas first were invented. Once again, that was The Elf, the Dormouse, and Oliver Herford. So basically what happened in this poetry selection, to just give some clarity, is that there was an elf and there was a dormouse. And what happened was that the weather was rainy, and the elf stumbled along a toadstool where the dormouse was fast asleep. So because it was raining, the elf took the toadstool from off of the ground to keep dry, and then went home. So this is what this poetry selection was all about, and just to give some description to it and a little clarity for those children that are listening from ages 6 to 9 of what took place in the poem. So you can imagine that the dormouse was wet when he or she finally woke up, and the elf was nice and dry as he went on home. So from this poetry selection, a toadstool is almost like the shape of an umbrella. So they said because of this story, hypothetically, this is how umbrellas came about. So it's a sense of humor, poetry selection, but it also shows how little things can be invented into major things. Okay, so now we're going to move along to our next poetry selection, which is The Fairies, written by William Annalingham. Up the airy mountain, down the rushy glen, we daren't go a-hunting. For fear of little men, we folk, good folk, trooping all together, green jacket, red cap, and white owl's feather. Down along the rocky shore, some make their home. They live on crispy pancakes of yellow tide foam. Some in the reeds of the black mountain lake, with frogs for their watchdogs, all night awake. By the craggy hillside, through the most bare, they have planted thorn trees for pleasures here and there. Is any man so daring as dig one up in spite? He shall find their sharpest thorns in his bed at night. Up the airy mountain, down the rushy glen, we daren't go a-hunting. For fear of little men, we folk, go folk, trooping all together, green jacket and red cap and white owl's feather. So once again, this is The Fairies, written by William Allingham. So this is just basically explaining how fairies, a group of fairies, are all together, and they're trooping all together, and they have specific type of uniform or attire on, and it's basically describing, when it talks about down along the rocky shore, some make their home of where they actually live, and they describe that they live on a crispy pancake of yellow tide foam. So this is where they actually live, and it's near a waterfall. So this specific place that they actually live at, they chose that location to stay away from men, like hunters that come to hunt, you know, in the forest or something like that. So they feel that that location is much safer for them. So this is what the poetry selection is about, and is just talking about the life of the fairy, where they live, the description of their clothes, why they chose the selection of where they at. So if you want, you can always go back and take a listen to each of the poetry selections that I've just read, and you can actually put some color to the poem, as now that you understand what's taking place in the poem. Okay, so now I'm going to move along to the next poetry selection for ages 10 to 12. So before I do that, I'm going to take a little break, and I'll be right back. Thank you. Okay, and we are back. So I'm going to start off with the poetry selection. It's called Trees, and this is written by Joyce Kilmer. I think that I should never see a poem lovely as a tree. A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet flowing breast. A tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray. A tree that may in the summer wear a nest of robins in her hair. Upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lives with rain. Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. Once again, that is Trees, written by Joyce Kilmer. And basically, all that poem is talking about is nature, how nature functions, and you know, just the description of the tree in itself, how it goes through the different phases of seasons. Well, not phases of seasons, but it specifically talked about the summer and the winter, and it just shows how the tree looks within those two seasons in itself. Okay, but it's talking about nature, it's talking about the tree and how the tree grow, and using certain things that people would do, such as acknowledge God or pray, and you know, using those types of descriptions to show how the leaf come about when you're looking at a tree, and you know, things of that nature. So we're gonna move along to our next poetry selection, and the title of the next poetry selection is called The House with Nobody in It, and it is written by Joyce Kilmer. Whenever I walk to suffering along the airy track, I go by a poor old farmhouse with its shingles broken and black. I suppose I've passed it 100 times, but I always stop for a minute and look at the house, the tragic house, the house with nobody in it. I never have seen a haunted house, but I hear there are such things, that they hold the talks of spirits, their mirth and sorrowings. I know this house isn't haunted, and I wish it were. I do, for it wouldn't be so lonely if it had a ghost or two. This house on the road to suffer needs 12 panes of glass, and somebody out to weed the walk and take a sith to the grass. It needs new paint and shingles, and the vines should be trimmed and tied. But what it needs the most of all is some people living inside. If I had a lot of money and all my debts were paid, I'd put a gang of men to work with brush and saw and spade. I'd buy that place and fix it up the way it used to be. And I'd find some people who wanted a home and give it to them free. Now a new house standing empty with staring windows and door looks idle, perhaps, and foolish, like a hat on its block in the store. But there's nothing mournful about it. It cannot be sad and lone for the lack of something within it that it has never known. But a house that has done what a house should do, a house that has sheltered life, that has put its loving wooden arms around a man and his wife, a house that has echoed a baby's laugh and held up his stumbling feet, is the saddest sight when it's left alone. that ever your eyes could meet. So whenever I go to suffering along the airy track, I never go by the empty house without stopping and looking back. Yet it hurts me to look at the crumbling roof and the shutters falling apart. For I can't help thinking the poor old house is a house with a broken heart. So once again, that was The House with Nobody in It. Once again, written by Joyce Kilmer. So with that being said, we're going to take another little break, and then we're going to be transitioning into our monologue for ages 13 to 17 and up. Okay, so I'm gonna start with the first monologue, and this is called Jagged Jasmine. So you all can actually listen in and enjoy the entertainment. They say that a gap between your two front teeth is attractive. Whoa, baby, I must be drop dead beautiful. This business of special good looks didn't happen overnight. It took years of tooth neglect. Way back in sixth grade, Daniela Thomas had enough candy in our locker to choke a camel. Kids came from halls all over school to catch fallen BB bats and sugar daddies when Daniela opened the locker. Her favorite stuff was kept in a safe on the top shelf of the locker. She made me take an oath never to touch her secret stash, and I never did. Until the end of the year, on the last day of school, I caught Daniela flirting with my boyfriend. I thought long and hard about how to get even. Revenge would be sweet. I marched straight to our locker, opened it, and reached for the safe. I felt the excitement building. I shivered as I thought of all the forbidden goodies locked inside. Nervously, my trembling fingers worked the combination. Three turns to the left, to the letter E, two turns to the right, to the letter A, and one turn to the left, to the letter T. I pulled out a brown bag and inspected its contents. Scooping out a handful of red jawbreakers, I tilted my head back and threw them into my mouth. Carefully closing the safe, I relished the moment to come. As I bit down on the round delicacies in my mouth, I felt my teeth cracked and shattered. I heard Daniela come up behind me, and I smiled in spite of the horrible pain. I kept my mouth shut so she wouldn't see the broken teeth. Daniela smiled at me and reached for the safe, opening it. She reached for the brown bag next. "Would you like to play with my marbles?" "Oh, no." So, as you can see, we finished with the monologue that Daniela Thomas loves candy, and her friend Jasmine, you know, she also liked the candy as well. So because of the situation, as we all can put the chronological storyline together, as Jasmine seen Daniela talking to her boyfriend, or flirting with him, as she would say, and because she assumed that that was taking place, she wanted to get revenge, and she went inside of Daniela Thomas locker to with the intention, to take her candy and eat her candy. But instead, the replacement was marbles. So just imagine you mistakenly eating a marble and you thinking that is candy. Ouch. So her teeth must have really hurt. And it just showed that because she ate the marble, she chipped her tooth as a result. But from the way things look from this monologue, it looks like Daniela Thomas does not know what was actually taking place. So, sometimes it's good to be a little careful, you know, when we form in little assumptions on certain things. You want to have this rule, which we call the 100 to 99% rule. So you want to be able to be 99%, but also know that there is 1% that you can actually be wrong. And upon that evaluation, you want to also be careful on your reaction or your summation of something before actually taking action towards something. Okay? Because you just might end up hurting yourself. So now moving along to the next monologue. This one is called The Rice Krispies. "Last night, it got too quiet at home. Everybody plugged into their computer. Earbud rules and no one was talking. We're becoming a nation of mutes. Have you noticed? Thumb and text messages. Have we lost the human element? The urge to call and actually hear someone's voice? Letter writing, a long gone. Is it a lost art? Now there's only the email or text message. No wonder paper mills are shutting down. So much for pretty stationery. The kind that comes in a nice box, sometimes it even has a fragrance. Back in the day, women sprayed their notes with perfume they wore. Can't send a scent in a text. Can't entice a guy with the smell you wear through an email. Communication is losing its romance. So anyway, back to the night before, like I said, it was way too quiet in the house. Even the dog looked at me, wondering when I was going to talk to her. I silently nodded and agreed with her. It was too quiet. Looking for a little noise, I reached for a bowl, smooth and round, empty and begging to be filled. In the pantry, I went for the Rice Krispies, snapped, crackled, and popped. I leaned my head over the bowl of cereal splashed with milk and hear the ruckus. It intensifies the closer I get to the bowl. The dog looks at me in a weird way. A crispy piece actually splashed a drop of milk at me, and I smiled. It's way too much fun. My black lab looks at me, wondering how something in a bowl seems so alive. My cell phone rings, promising a voice on the other end. Do I die for it and risk eating soggy Krispies or call them back? How hungry am I to hear a person's voice, starve for human interaction? I go for it. Hello. Hang on a minute, will ya? Munching on spoonful, the crackling continues. My friend on the other end hears it. Yep, you're right, it's good old snap, crackles, and pop. They never let me down, and I laugh. My friend crackles, and I accidentally drop the bowl to the floor. Milk running everywhere. Oh, snap. So as you can see, in this monologue, it's showing that this person is acknowledging how communication has declined in terms of having a formal interaction with someone, from email to writing letters and things of that nature, how there's no more touch of human interaction going on, no human element, is what she described, or he described, in this monologue. And it just basically talking how it comes also as if people are mutes, like they no longer know how to bring a touch of liveliness to communication anymore, because they rely on text messages and emails and things of that nature to communicate. So that's what that monologue was all about, and I'm pretty sure that some of you can actually relate to that, because in this society, as we see, everyone is constantly distracted on their phones, and they're on social media, and they're just texting with their friends and things of that nature, so it's not no real dialogue taking place. And then once they are in front of each other, the dialogue seems to be a little wavering, because it's different from being at home and you communicate with someone over the internet. But then when you're actually in front of them, it's something a little different. It may be a little awkward, you know. So sometimes we need to encourage more social interaction and be able to talk formally with each other and have laughter and not be so mechanical in our approach or generic when it comes to our communication factor. So with that being said, the show has come to a close, and I thank you all for listening, adults, children, which I consider my little rosebuds. Thank you for listening to the show, and then I hope that it was of some entertainment, and you all have a great evening. Thank you.